You can shop from anywhere doing pretty much anything. You might shop while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast. And however you shop, we all know and love the thrill of the hunt. But do you also know how to get the thrill of the best deals? Because Rakuten shoppers do. With Rakuten, they get the deals they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Sephora, Nike, and even Expedia if you're looking to get some travel in. And getting cash back doesn't mean you have to miss out on sales because those can just be stacked right on top. It's easy to use and based on a simple idea. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back through PayPal or check. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
Welcome to My Vagina. This is Jesse Karen.
This is Rebecca Frank.
And here we are again, having our current hysterical and infuriating conversation about our lives as vagina-having organisms.
All content made up on the spot, but probably researched. Just kidding, fools. It's definitely researched. I almost forgot my part. I like started saying it and I was like, wait, is that Rebecca's part?
I know, I actually almost forgot that there was a part after.
We are not at our best selves today.
Not at our best. It's all right. It happens.
Love us anyway.
Please.
First, we're going to talk about some fun childbearing
facts. Childbirth facts.
Childbirth facts.
Yeah. Something. facts relating to the birth of children.
Yeah. And then we're going to talk to Bonnie Silva, who is an amazing doula.
Yeah. It was a great conversation. Bonnie's awesome. Mm-hmm. And then stick around to the end because I found out something really cool about hermit crabs this week.
And it's giving all of us life.
All of us.
And please don't forget to donate to us on glow.fm/welcometomyvagina because we can't do this without you. And your money.
Yeah, seriously. No joke.
Help the community.
Yeah. Us being the community.
Merchandise. Who wants a vagina on underwear, briefs, thongs? Send us a message, welcometomyvagina@gmail.com or on Instagram at welcometomyvagina.
Yeah. Ooh, I just burped.
We're going to do a couple interesting facts about childbirth.
Yeah.
That was one of them.
Did you know that midwives attend only 4% of births in the United States and 75% of births in Europe?
I did not know that.
That's a lot.
A baby earned the nickname bungee cord baby when he fell out of his mother while she stood up from her wheelchair. What?
Wow.
That's okay.
That's crazy. During the 1700s in France, the umbilical cords of royal babies were dusted with powdered cumin and myrrh.
Why?
I don't even know what myrrh is.
Why?
Doesn't say. Doesn't say. This might have to be something that we look up later.
Yeah, I'm interested. Oh my God, that's so sad.
What?
If the mother's vagina holds sexually transmitted bacteria like chlamydia or gonorrhea during childbirth, it can cause the baby to go blind.
Oh, no.
Yeah, it's not happy.
That's
sorry.
Really
Woof.
Sad. Even though 95% of women are considered low risk and able to give birth without medical intervention, only 2% of them do so.
All mammals except humans routinely eat their placenta after giving birth. That's interesting.
Yeah, except What's-Her-Face does.
I'm so squeamish about
What's
it.
Her name? Christina, what was her name? She was in Mad Men. Mad Men Placenta Eater.
Oh.
What was her name?
Fuck.
It'll tell me. January Jones.
Christina.
I was close. a tradition exists in Bali that includes cleaning the placenta, putting it in a container, and burying it in an intricate ceremony. I think that's nice.
Yeah, it is nice. Some women of the merchant class in 19th century China had a Taoist priest whisper prayers into their ears during childbirth to encourage an easy delivery. So here's my thing. I'm going to go ahead and assume that the priest was a male. Maybe that's wrong of me, but I feel like.
No, I think that's fair.
The last thing that I would want in childbirth is any man. I don't care if you talk to God or whatever. Whispering in my fucking ear. Like, I feel like that's dangerous.
Yeah, you're like, take those nothings somewhere else, please. Right.
Like, if I ever even have a baby, I don't even know if my husband should be, like, within arm's reach.
Yeah.
I'm going to be that mom who screams, you did this to me.
Yeah, seriously. In the Netherlands and Japan, most women choose not to take any form of pain medication during childbirth at all.
Oh.
Yeah.
Wait, where?
In the Netherlands and also Japan.
Do you? I don't know. I feel like I'd be like, give me the shot.
Yeah, I think I probably would too.
Babies.
Babies.
And now we're going to talk to Bonnie.
Oh, get out! Oh, no.
What do you look like?
I shouldn't have gone in there. Don't go in there. Promise me you don't go in there.
Cool. Well, we're here with Bonnie Silva. Hi.
Oh, my God. Hi.
Did I say that right? I think I
Yeah, it's Bonnie Silva. No, totally. I know. People like love to think that my name is some sort of a crazy awesome nickname. And I'm just like, no, that's just me.
There was a girl I went to high school with whose first name was Jenny. Just Jenny.
Oh, yeah.
And
I
always wondered, like, how many people would be like, oh, is that short for Jennifer?
Yeah. I can tell you a lot. Totally. That probably happens to her all the fucking time.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally.
I go by Jessie, and on my birth certificate, it says Jessica. But I don't know why people always ask me that. It drives me fucking crazy. I've talked about it on the podcast like 10 times.
Yeah, but
for
what
me,
do
it's
they...
like you ask me what my name is and I told you that it's Jessie. Even my mother calls me Jessie.
Yeah.
So what does it matter if it's on my birth? Like, because they'll be like, yeah, but what's your real name? And I'll be like, my real name is Jessie.
Yeah. That's but why. It's also like, I also wonder, like, what else do they, we've also talked about this, is like, what else is Jessie short for? Like,
yeah, exactly.
I mean, there are
yeah,
a couple
I
of
have
other
no
possibilities,
just,
right?
Yeah,
like,
nothing,
Jessamine,
nothing.
Maybe, but like, really, like, that's not common. So,
just assume.
Like, just, yeah, make an assumption and fucking move along, dude.
I told you what I like to be called.
Move along. Move along.
Yeah, so, like, there are two things about my name that are interesting. People always think it's a nickname, and I'm like, what would it be short for? Bonita? And I'm like, same amount of letters, first of all. And then, second
You're
of
like,
all.
Like, what's Nick about that?
Yeah, there's no nickname about that, my friend. And then, second of all, like 90% of the people that with the name Bonnie are like 60 years old. So it's a conundrum, but it's kind of cool. But it's like, at the same time.
Anyway,
let's get into it.
Yeah, totally.
Bonnie, how did you become a doula? Why did you want to be a doula? Well, tell us about your path.
No, that's like a really, really great question. asked that a lot. No, that's true, though. But I get asked that a lot. And quite frankly, it's a really great question because I'm 37 years old and I have absolutely like no desire to have kids. Right.
Yeah.
And it's an educated choice because I think that when I was 33, I decided to do like a yoga teacher training because I was kind of tired of being a bartender server and I couldn't see myself physically doing that. Mm-hmm. For a very long time. So I was like thinking about the big picture.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, you know, as you get older, your joints and all of the things, and it's physically like debilitating over time.
Where they just make like click clacks as you move.
Yeah. It's kind like, I have like a whole like fossy inside my body every time I walk. So long story short, I was doing a yoga training and I was just like, oh my God, I suck at teaching. So I was like, let me try to do like a specific certification in the yoga industry. So I did prenatal. And within the prenatal, that's when I met Lindsay Bliss. She is a doula, but at the time she was pregnant with her 7th kid. And she came in and talked about being doulas. So in the prenatal certification, we found out what midwives were, what doulas were, what, you know, different settings in the pregnancy world, which I had no idea anything about. So for me, it was very educational. Yeah.
So many different areas of doula. I kind of want a life doula. Like, I mean, like no baby attached, just like, you know, like a life coach doula.
Yeah, totally. And I'm sure
comforting.
I'm sure there's somebody out there. So within the prenatal certification, met Lindsay. She talked about being a doula. It really like resonated with me and I kind of felt a calling or like found quote unquote my gift or whatever you want to call it in the hokey pokey world. Researched it, loved it, did a certification, and was invited to join Carriage House. So that's kind of like how I started my doula career. And I think that becoming a doula, so this was like 3 years ago. So over the course of the 3 years, I've been like, my mind has been blown many, many times, and I'm surprised I still have a brain. Because, because like the the knowledge that I've been gaining over time, and I just, every time I learn something new, either if I'm with a client at a hospital, or if I'm doing a postpartum, or if I'm doing an overnight with a preemie baby that's like 3 days old, mm-hmm. you know, I'm learning all of these things. At the same time, like, yes, I have experience, so I'm able to care and I'm able to provide service.
Yeah.
But of course, it's also a career that you learn a lot. And by learning all of these things, I'm surprised that we don't talk about it in society. I'm surprised that we don't talk about how women's bodies morph into something totally different as we get older, as we have kids. Our vaginas change, you know? Like, nowadays, probiotics is a thing in my life now, you know?
Interesting.
Yeah, totally. Interesting.
Yeah,
collagen is really good. Like,
I guess,
you know,
we don't talk about what we're afraid of.
We don't talk about a lot of things because I feel like anybody that has a vulva, mm-hmm. I feel like they're, you know, and I'm saying specifically women, I think that we're afraid of aging. We're afraid of talking about things that make us uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. Also, because society makes us feel like it's shameful and it's guilty.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. I also think if you look at even just like speaking about motherhood as a specific thing, like pregnancy, childbirth, all that kind of stuff, it's been protected in our national conversation as this like magical thing that happens, and it's like the magic of childbirth. Like, how many times have you heard that? And it's
so many times, and
it's like, yeah, it's an incredible thing. Like, we build babies, right? Mm-hmm. But at the same time, it's like there's so much more to it than that. That is just like, I don't know what people are afraid of happening. Are they afraid that if women know what childbirth is like and what, like, how it changes your body and all this other stuff, that they won't have kids? Like, that's not going to happen.
Yeah. I think it's because we don't normalize things very much. You know, for example, specifically when I have a birth client, I try to normalize birth as much as possible. I talk about anatomy. I talk about what muscles in your body actually relate to what's going on in your labor. And by normalizing it, you know, I'm trying to normalize the fear, the anxiety that's happening. Like, can you imagine that you're having a fetus growing inside of you? That's That's super fucking freaky.
Yeah.
Right? It's a freaky idea. Mm-hmm. And when you start to normalize and try to think about, like, sure, like, your body literally created a placenta.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's freaking amazing. It's really cool.
Yeah.
Like, how the chemistry in your body creates a different organ in order to sustain a life inside of you.
Yeah.
It's a pretty, like, so once you start normalizing the situation, you start to have it be less of a fear base and more of like, oh, okay, let's do this.
Yeah. It's also like having that community. And I also, it's so funny because I feel like doulas they're not a new concept.
No.
But I feel like even, you know, back when I was in high school and whatever, I feel like doulas were considered like, I don't know, quote unquote hippie shit.
Yeah, totally.
And like, and like, it's obviously becoming more mainstream in medicine.
Yeah.
But the more I go into it, it just seems so fucking important up. Important up?
New word here today. Important up.
I don't even know what that sentence is.
But where did the up come from?
I have literally no idea where it came from.
Yeah, just like it's like you became your iPhone
spazzed out,
and like you just
I
like,
wasn't even reading.
You just like pressed something and a word appeared. You know, that happens all the time.
Yeah. Yes.
You became your iPhone.
Anyway, sorry. I mean, it's good that medicine's catching up, and I think it's really important. But like, why do you think it's becoming mainstream, or like, why are people finally starting to, like, is there some kind of movement that people are finally like understanding the value of a community and having somebody like comfort their?
Cool. I'm totally going to answer this based on my own opinion.
Okay.
So that way you don't get like hate mails. My personal opinion.
We love hate mails.
Yeah.
We've made it.
We've been getting crushed recently.
Oh, God. Let's start a rumor.
Yeah.
So I think that, unfortunately, and I might be totally wrong, but I think it's because it got popular with celebrities. Like, celebrities use doulas, right? Mm-hmm. The movie
makes sense.
The Business of Being Born.
Yeah.
Like, celebrities talk about doulas and they made it popular. And then what happened is the doula community was like, no, 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 it's not just for rich, wealthy people that can afford our service. it's also for volunteer and community doula as well.
Oh, that's
so
awesome.
I think that that's how it happened. Mm-hmm. Do I know that that's true? No!
I mean, we recently had an interaction with this woman mm-hmm. in, I think, California, who's trying to become a community doula. Mm-hmm. And we were helping to raise some money for her. I'll put her name in the episode notes because it's escaping me right now.
Awesome.
But I think that there is a tradition of having doulas in certain communities. And
In certain cultures,
yes. Absolutely. And I think because we value certain stories over others and certain people's stories over mm-hmm. others, it hadn't made it into the mainstream conversation yet. Mm-hmm. And so it took the celebrities normalizing it for like everybody else. And then everyone who's been doing it forever is like, hello, yeah. You know, I'm glad you guys finally got on fucking board. But
well, let's talk about the fact that Europeans have doulas. They prefer generally, and I'm not specifically saying all of Europe, but generally a lot of countries in Europe, they prefer you to go to a midwife before you go to an OBGYN, because mm-hmm. when you go to an OBGYN, they're licensed to do surgery and they know how to do surgery. So mm-hmm. you want to go, if it's a high risk pregnancy, right, to an OBGYN. Other than that, they try to get you to do either a home birth or a birthing center birth with a midwife and a doula.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe, if I'm not wrong, because please fact check my information, but I believe that in Germany, they give you postpartum doulas for a hot minute. So like, you know, it's like, let's like talking about that, like, you know, in this day and age, there are countries that will support parents in the beginning of their parenthood, which can be very challenging,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to America has a culture where we just don't support each other. It's all for themselves, like the wild, wild west.
Yeah.
You know, so it's very frustrating. And I think that it just tells you how much far we have to go, but then how much bullshit we also have to paddle through.
Yeah, and let's also think about, while you were talking about that, I've been thinking about how the maternal mortality rate in the United States has been increasing. And
especially for Black and Brown women.
Yeah.
According to the CDC, Black women in the U.S. are 3 to 4 times as likely to die from pregnancy or childbirth. Related causes, or childbirth-related causes than white women.
And like Serena Williams?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
wild. The one of the most famous people in the world, one of the best athletes in the world, has all the money she needs and still almost died.
Yeah.
So it's coming to the point where it has nothing to do with class. It has to do with the fact that they're not listening to the patients.
Yeah.
And so by not listening to them, there's kind of a systematic racial thing going on.
Yeah.
And by that, there's also, you know, obstetric violence going on, where it's probably been normalized in the medical world where, you know, doulas, and we're coming in and we're seeing this and we're like starting a conversation now about that mm-hmm. too.
Yeah.
Just to add really quick, that in Europe between 2000 and 2015, the maternal mortality rate overall dropped from 33 to 16 deaths per 100,000 live births.
Wow.
So that went down.
Ours is steadily rising.
And ours is, so it's gone down. Whereas in a time period, from 2000 to 2014, ours has gone up 26.6%, mm-hmm. From 18.8 deaths to 23.8 deaths per 100,000.
Which is and the a lot highest of them, in and, any developing world,
yeah,
or and developing country.
20 to 50% of those deaths are due to preventable causes like hemorrhaging, high blood pressure, infection.
Totally.
And so when you look at kind of what I see, and correct me if I'm wrong, absolutely, as sort of the purpose for doula, it's so individualized care, and you build a relationship with your patient and you're looking for these sorts of things. And
absolutely.
So it's understanding that childbirth is a thing that can require medical intervention, but doesn't necessarily have to at all times.
Exactly. You know, I think that everybody, there's a phrase that I like to, and I got this from my collective that I worked very closely to, Carriage House, is that you birth how you live your life, right? And some people are like, what does that mean? But it's like, here's the thing. So let's talk about that for a hot second. Like, if you trust your doctor and you feel safe in a hospital, you're going to have a baby in a hospital. Maybe natural, quote unquote, natural birth, meaning no interventions, no medical drugs in a birthing center, might not be the thing for you. Mm-hmm. And that's mm-hmm. okay.
Totally.
You know, I think that, and then like, let's say, for example, you are more holistic. You trust your doctor, but you feel very strongly about non-intervention birth. Look into a birthing center. Look into a birthing center that's close to a hospital if anything has to be transferred, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I think it's also respecting people's boundaries, respecting how they live their life, and respecting how they want to birth their baby.
Absolutely.
You know, once we start to have more respect and listen to clients when they say, this is what I want and this is what I don't want, with consent and information, mm-hmm. then maybe things will start to change.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was reading an article in Vice. I'm not sure if you know the, what's her name? Malatesta. She sued her hospital because they advertised as like a place that allowed you to pick your own form of childbirth, like sit, stand, squat, like whatever your plan is, that they would do it within the bounds of the hospital. Mm-hmm. And so the doctor wasn't on call, so he didn't show up, and she wound up being, they wouldn't listen, they ignored her when she told them what she wanted. She was told to obey, and then when she was giving birth, she was violently pinned down to the bed.
Yeah.
And
how are you supposed to give birth like that? It's like thinking about women in hospitals giving birth like handcuffed.
Yeah.
Yeah, like Twilight Zones.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Like Twilight Birth, sorry.
Yeah. Zones. I love that we're like, yeah, Twilight Zones. Twilight totally. Zone, right? Fucking hate those zones, man. Fucking Twilight Zone motherfuckers.
But there was a doula named Emily Varnin, and her, like, the favorite quote that I saw in this article was that
she's Emily Moonbeam on Instagram.
Yeah,
I know her.
Yeah. She's the one who said, the amount of times I've had to say she's saying no and you have your hand in her vagina, you need to take it out, is unreal.
Yeah.
And that, like, she feels more like a bodyguard than a doula. So instead of, like, offering comfort and, you know, care and, like, what is good for that woman's autonomy, they're protecting more of a, like, barrier and protection, mm-hmm. and, like, able to give, to say no when they can't.
Absolutely. And a lot of births, you do feel like that. And, you know, we as doulas, we also have to remember that that's not our birth. You know, we're not medical staff, so we can't really say much.
Yeah.
You know, so we do live in that, like, conundrum, like, fine line of when to actually speak up, when to not speak up, when to not get banned. Like, doulas can get banned from hospitals.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, like, we walk. Oh, yeah. So, like, if we, quote unquote, disrespect a doctor, however what he thinks is disrespectful, mm-hmm. to him or her at the time, they can ban us from a hospital. So, like, we walk that really fine line where we don't want to get banned from a hospital because we need to work. Mm-hmm. We also want to make sure that our client is safe and having the preferences in her birth plan being met.
Mm-hmm.
But we also want to make sure that the family's not being traumatized and baby's alive. So there's a lot, mm-hmm. of things that, there are many hats that we fill when we're in a room.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I'm a photographer, at the same time I'm holding space, at the same time I'm making sure that, you know, she's getting the, not making sure, but, like, trying to at least, like, fucking entertain the idea that she's going to get a epidural or if she wants to. You know, yeah. like, there's so many things that happen. So yeah. it's really... It's a lot, you know. That's why we as doulas talk so much about self-care, because we have to kind of be on guard the whole time.
Listening to my friends talking about doctors and what they miss and stuff like that, it's like, I'm like, for the fucking so nurses scary. And doulas 100%.
Yeah.
Because those are the people you interact with. And I feel like, and I'm totally making a blanket statement here, but it's the difference between, I think, like, those are the people that I think see me as a person,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to being seen as a patient or a number or something like that. Do you know what I mean?
Both.
You know, I do have to say that I have attended births in the past where they had an OB, they had a birth at the hospital. And honestly, it was one of the best experiences. It was like, mm-hmm. top five best experiences for me as a doula. So not to say that doctors are evil, but there are a lot of things that are happening in hospitals with OBs that's not being addressed. And yeah. I think that it's like that rotten apple in the tree or in the sack, mm-hmm. whatever that thingy is. You know, there's a rotten apple in the sack, everything's gonna get rotten, you know.
Yeah,
it's kind of like that.
Yeah, is a
that
rotten a apple in the sack makes all the apples go bad, something like yeah. that. that sounds not right, but sure.
So it's kind of like that situation, you know what I mean? Like, there are fantastic OBs out there and there are fantastic mm-hmm, midwives. And but some midwives sometimes
Got
give
it?
A bad reputation.
The rotten apple injures the neighbors.
Oh, weird. I never would have guessed that.
It is an expression coming from 14th century Latin proverb.
Well, there you go. I just pulled something out of the 14th century.
Look at you. Time traveler right here.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
Not to say that all of my experiences have been bad. I've had some quite fantastic ones. But unfortunately, it is the situation where, like,
yeah,
one midwife might give you a bad rep. Might, yeah, you know, one OB might give a bad rep. And it happens a lot. Yeah.
It's with anything. And we always talk about that. Like, obviously, there's amazing doctors. There's amazing OBs. But, like, within that, like, overall, I think we're talking about the side of the medical community that has often kind of given rights to that super, given rights to a baby that supersede the woman. A 2014 survey of over 2,000 doulas, childbirth educators, and labor and delivery nurses in the US and Canada found that almost 90% had witnessed a care provider engage in procedures without giving a woman a choice to consider, or choice or time to consider, and nearly 60% had observed providers perform procedures explicitly against the women's wishes. And, like, especially, I just found out, I had no idea that this was a thing, mm-hmm, but court-ordered C-sections?
What?
I'm not surprised. I'm, yeah, not gonna lie. I'm not, yeah, surprised.
Wait,
at all.
Wait.
Like,
wait.
When the court overrules your,
so, yeah,
wishes.
It's essentially when an OBGYN is suggesting that her, like, that the baby is in peril, and so that they get a court order to give her a C-section if she denies it.
Jesus.
And it had, I think it had to be overturned. Yeah, so in some circumstances, the OBGYN's ethical obligation to safeguard the pregnant woman's autonomy may conflict with the ethical desire to optimize the health of the fetus. Forced compliance, the alternative to respecting a patient's refusal of treatment, raises profoundly important issues about patients' rights, respective autonomy, violations of bodily integrity, yada yada yada.
Yeah, wow.
It just feels like somebody had a lot of time in their hands.
Yeah, I mean, in 2016, the American College of Gynecologists and Obstetricians issued a comprehensive committee opinion affirming that they overturned it.
Yeah, as they fucking should.
Yeah, that, like,
it just seems like a waste of time, and somebody had too much time in their hands.
But yeah, not really, because it says that a decisional capable pregnant woman has the right to refuse treatment, and discouraging in the strongest possible terms the use of duress, manipulation, coercion, physical force, or threats.
Right.
But that still of kind of leaves it open to the fact that, like, if they really wanted to get a court order, they could.
Yeah, that's really.
It's just, you know, it's not, if we look at the legislation around women, women's health care, mm-hmm, women's bodies, it's, yeah, not terribly surprising, because we've talked about this so many times that this, it's in so many ways, it's the second you get pregnant, all of a sudden you are secondary to whatever's in the eyes of the law. It feels like we then become secondary to what's growing inside of us.
Mm-hmm. Hi, we just were able to vote, like, last century.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's fucking nuts.
Yeah. It's like, I mean, how long have we been, like, how long do I have to put a paper on a stick and, like, fight for my rights? Like,
yeah,
like, how long do I have to do this? Like, I just have a really hard time understanding.
Honestly, like, that's the greatest weapon, is that birth doulas kind of have the knowledge of, like, where you can go because they've witnessed it.
Well, I feel like the Grim Reaper is, like, my best friend. Like, we really walk the fine line of life and death. Like, think, yeah, about it. You know, like, I've unfortunately witnessed babies be born that were not breathing. You know,
yeah,
and did not take a breath anymore. You know, so, like, and then I've witnessed babies that did take breath.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's, we witnessed a lot of things in, you know, at the hospitals, birthing centers, homes, in birth in general, that really puts us in a really, like, interesting path.
Yeah.
For sure.
Oof. So doulas are already kind of seen as something, I don't know, extra, or, like,
oh, absolutely.
Bougie, I would say. Like, sure, something rich celebrities have made popular. So, like, obviously, yeah, it's something that, like, it is maybe not something everyone considers to get in terms of self-care for themselves. I think it's incredible to even have a doula before and during birth. But the whole idea of postpartum, especially in the U.S., seems, like, absolutely gratuitous. And it's not. I think it's amazing.
Well, I think it's super needed, you know, yeah, especially, like, in the city of New York, you know, 90% of my clients are clients that don't have family around. So they rely on somebody rely, mm-hmm, on extra hands, not somebody extra. I mean, I'm extra, but not like that. And so having that extra set of hands to be able to help them really, really is helpful.
Yeah.
You know, and however way they want that. Mm-hmm. And it looks different. I kid you not, like, if I could sit down here and tell you about each and every birth that I've attended, we would have to be here all day.
Yeah.
Because every single birth has been different. It's really, mm-hmm, like a snowflake, you know? That's, aww, why the idea of birth is just so individual. Mm-hmm. It sounds very like, yeah, you could go by textbook, but I have never seen a book by textbook. Mm-hmm. It's never been the same.
Yeah.
You know, and the same goes for postpartum, because you have to understand that people are different, regardless if they're from the same family, if they're like in the same group of friends, they are just going to raise their kid differently. Mm-hmm. And it's all about acceptance and just respect.
Yeah. I'm not sure if I saw it on your website or just in general, but the support of a partner as being part of the doula's duties.
Yeah. Well, a lot of times, you know, I do get those macho dudes that think that I'm going to like substitute them. And I'm like, well, I didn't get her pregnant, so no.
Oh my God. Go on. Go on.
Right? No, I like invite them. And of course, like men can be big babies where they're like, I can't see blood. You know, I can't cut the cord. And I'm like, all right, fine. That's fine. Yeah. You just sit there and just be supportive of her. But some dudes, you know, specifically cisgender men, which have been 90% of the partners that I have supported, you know, they want to get involved. And it's, you know, they might get a little traumatized, as one does in birth. But a lot of times it's very beneficial for the laboring partner as well.
Well, there's like the star, right? Yeah. And then there's the backup singer.
Yeah, sometimes you got to be the backup singer.
Yeah. The partner is a backup singer who still deserves to be taken care of.
Sure.
But not nearly as much as that star. Get that girl a Poland Spring.
Yeah, and I'm the guitarist. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes, you are. Overall, I feel like it's been universal that we give birth on our backs, right? But from what I understand, I feel like that happened way back in time. And there's theories. This is my favorite theory.
Yeah. Theory time.
So the earliest records show that women gave birth squatting, sitting, standing. There's a sculpture of Cleopatra kneeling while she gave birth, and like birthing stools and chairs that date back to the Babylonian times. But according to legend, and a handful of medical scholars, Louis XIV had 22 children by both wives and mistresses alike, and had a fascination with watching women give birth. So he didn't want anything to obstruct his view. So like kneeling or squatting.
It's like birth porn.
Yes.
Yeah.
Wow. Yes.
That's the thing. Oh my God. A lot of guys are like real, like they get in there and I'm just like, wow, dude. Like,
ew. Back up.
Back up a little bit.
Yeah.
People just like, wiping their glasses off. Totally.
Yeah. They like really want to get in. They really want to see the baby crown. I know. It sounds really weird if you're not used to it. Like, girl, like when I got into the birth world as a birth worker, I had no fucking idea what I was getting myself into.
Yeah.
I've never seen a baby come out of a vagina.
Ever? Still?
No.
Oh,
I mean, I have now, queen.
Oh. I was like, what kind of doula are you?
Yeah. Wait a second.
Virtual. Right? Yeah. So, I mean, I can understand how it can be like super freaky, but like I've seen dudes that are like, oh yeah, I want to see it. They're like totally into it. And I'm appreciative of that. I'm like, hey, you know what? At least you're not being the weirdo that's like trying to pass out in the corner and get all the attention.
Yeah, that's fair. Fair.
No, like, I'm like, hey, you're into this? Cool. That means you're probably going to be into taking care of the kid, hopefully.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, like, I'm like,
and the lady.
Cool. Yeah, like,
and
do
the lady.
You.
I'm and cool. You're not going to be one of those fucking dudes who all of a sudden, like, feels weird about having sex with their wife anymore.
Yeah. And
you
because
know
that
mean?
Is exactly. Legit a thing.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Especially if you've, had a really traumatic birth. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Months.
New York is planning to expand the use of doulas in order to reduce childbirth deaths.
Oh, nice.
So de Blasio administration is launching a comprehensive plan to reduce maternal deaths and life-threatening complications from childbirth among women of color by leaning more heavily on doulas and normalizing doulas, which is fantastic.
Yeah.
I was actually wondering more when we look at industries that have grown kind of outside of regulatory bodies and how that would either move into a regulatory to being more regulated in terms of having like a standardized system of education. I don't know. Like I'm thinking about these different companies that have kind of disrupted different industries. So looking at, you know, like Uber, like I hate to use Uber as an example, but like
you do use Uber a lot,
but it's like the perfect disruption.
Yeah.
Right. And so there's a lot of different things that are coming in and disrupting different organizations. And I wonder whether considering that, as far as I know, doulas kind of operate outside of regulatory bodies, whether it's kind of like ripe for a disruption and there's going to be a company to come swoop in and create this like doula app. This went a completely different place than where I started.
They can create all the doula apps they want. Mm-hmm. The matter of the fact is what really works is when there is a human present and that human is called a doula.
Oh, I don't mean like that you do it on your phone. I mean like to find people.
Oh, well, you know, I mean, there already is stuff like that out there. Mm-hmm. I'm not bothered by that. I'm also the type of doula that believes that there is a client for every single person, every single doula out there. I don't believe in competition because I go to hospitals all the time and there are a lot of rooms without doulas. Mm-hmm. So in regards to that, they can create all the companies they want. They can create all of the things that I'm like, good, great, let's do it.
Yeah.
What it matter of the fact that it comes into it is, you know, the Medicare situation. I know that I'm not really knowledgeable specifically on the details, but I know that they wanted to get some doulas on Medicaid. So they would pay a certain amount of money and then they would have to do a certain amount of services. So, for example, they would pay like around $500. And then you would have to do like 4 prenatals, the duration of the birth, and like 6 postpartums.
Us
doulas. That's
you
like,
would pay $500?
No. The clients would pay $500, okay, or Medicare would give us $500.
So insurance does cover doulas?
No.
That's what I was going to ask. Like how not like I this is a thing that I've never asked because I always feel like I get weird thinking mm-hmm. about like money and stuff. But like how.
But I that's the thing. Like I think that, you know, as women specifically, mm-hmm. we need to stop doing that.
No, absolutely.
Because I think that money is something we need to talk about.
Right.
That's how we sustain ourselves.
So one of those things that I've been reading is what I was originally trying to before I went into my whole disruption thing, which is still working in my head, is that there isn't a like. If you're going to become a doctor, you're going to become a nurse. There are steps that you take and mm-hmm. you then command with those degrees, you'd command a certain salary. So you're looking at, you know, a hospital in a state will set the salary for that state and all hospitals kind of work around. But you can look at a state and say, if I'm going to live in New York as a first year nurse, I'm guaranteed, let's say $80,000 a year. If okay. I'm going to be in a different state, I'm guaranteed only $40,000 a year.
Mm-hmm.
And because it seems as though doulas are the vast majority of doulas are women. And they operate outside of any sort of like brick and mortar standardized medical degree, like that kind of mm-hmm. stuff. Is there
certifications and stuff like
yeah,
that?
Certifications. Yeah, certifications. And totally. How do you establish like because there's nothing because I don't feel as though there's any sort of like set standard by like what you have to be paid. In order to
generally in New York, and I only speak for New York because I haven't lived anywhere else and I don't really know how it is in a lot of other states. I think it's a state by state situation in regards mm-hmm. to the money. For New York, for example, like I'm a tier doula. I've attended about 45 births going on to 50. I would say that I am about $1,200 to $1,400 and even up to $1,800 depending on the birth,
mm-hmm.
depending on the collective that I'm getting the birth from. So that's a question into multiple answers, right? So I'll mm-hmm. answer them very quickly so it makes sense.
Yeah.
Regarding certifications, you do a doula workshop and you choose the kind of workshop that most resonates with you.
Mm-hmm.
And then from that workshop, you do several types of things. You do essays on books. You go to workshops. You do lactation courses. So you complete the course in order to get the certification.
Mm-hmm.
That being done, you can be part of collectives because as a doula, you're a freelancer.
Okay.
So you do your own website, your own cards, all of the things you promote yourselves. But to be able to network, I suggest being part of a collective as well. Being part of a collective, they're going to have a specific number of births that you've attended, and that's the specific number of amount of money that you're worth.
I see.
You are actually going to be based on the experience that you had. So because I'm like I said before, I'm a tier three, I'm between $1,200 to $1,800. But a tier one doula, for example, could be from $800 to $1,000.
Okay.
How many tiers are there?
I believe that in
how many tiers is this cake?
I know. It's a matcha cake.
Can keep going.
It's funny because different collectives have different kind of standards, but it generally is like 1 to about 4 to 5 tiers and then quote unquote master, which okay. is about over 300 births.
Ooh, master.
Master.
Interesting.
And so since you said that doulas aren't covered by health insurance,
mm-hmm.
are there situations set up where there are payment plans or where collectives or something offers financial support for women?
Because each collective has their own program of how they like to get paid.
Okay.
When it's privately, for example, and I have a personal relationship with the clients, you know, depending if they can pay it up front total or they can do it in two parts, like one when they hire me and the second payment at 37 weeks, which is about the time that I'm always on call for 24 hours. After the 37th week, you're 100% on call because a baby can come anytime. Baby can come anytime before then, But at 37 weeks, that's when things can happen.
Mm-hmm.
So that's generally how it is.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so you have one client at a time.
I like to have like 3 to 4 clients at a time. I'm a full spectrum and I'm a newborn care specialist. So I sometimes will do just 1 month of births. So I'll take like 3 to 4 births. And then I'll take turns where the next month I'll do more like overnights, postpartum and whatnot. So that way I can still make a good income, but not deplete myself and be able to maintain like the quote unquote self-care, which is usually me lounging around in my sweat, smoking weed and, you know, like a cat. But, you know, everybody's different, great. You know, lots of cat naps. But I know some doulas that do strictly birth. And then I know some doulas that are like strictly postpartum, a little bit of birth.
Yeah.
So it's different for everybody, really. Mm-hmm. And doulas, I like to say that they're like Skittles. They're all of the colors of the rainbow. So that's why, like, a lot of people, when they interview me, I feel like I'm always the cherry popper.
Yeah,
because I'll come in and they'll be like, oh my god, you're the first doula we're interviewing. I'm like, okay then. All right,
you're our
then.
Second doula. We got in deep with you.
So like, you know, that's why I always tell people, especially when I'm going into clients where it's their first time interviewing a doula, I'm like, well, interview other doulas, see what you like out there, because I might not be the doula for you.
Mm-hmm.
Cuz I'm like, if they like me, they're going to fucking like me and they're going to hire me immediately.
Where's the placenta go?
Oh, that's a good question. Because a lot of people are like, placenta, what?
Yeah.
First of all, I think that a placenta as an organ, it's really beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
When you lay it out, it actually looks like the tree, which is why they call it the tree of life.
I didn't know they called it the tree of life.
I didn't know that.
I can show you guys a placenta.
Dope.
Afterwards.
Yeah.
I think it's really cool. Oh, no. Like, it looks like a liver, first of all.
Okay.
If you've ever seen a raw liver. But then.
Nope.
No. Sure haven't.
Anyway, so a placenta comes out, and then you can choose to either encapsulate it, bury it, do a ceremonial, like, pagan thing.
Mm. You could
it's
eat
really
it.
Whatever you want. My mom buried mine at St. Elizabeth's Hospital. So.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, in Boston.
Yeah.
But you can eat it because supposedly there are nutritional value. As much as a cow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They did that study. A friend of mine told me the other day.
Yeah.
They suggest that you have it after you start breastfeeding. So there's no disruption with the milk in regards to the placenta.
Mm.
What else? It helps with baby blues, I've heard.
Oh.
Yeah. You know, depression, postpartum depression is something very common. People don't talk about it. Postpartum anxiety is something very common. People don't talk about.
Mm.
So it aids with that as well. But it's also very personal. Like, some people are like, fuck that.
I didn't know that it was just as common to have your placenta like above, because my friend was saying that she doesn't feel her baby kicking that much because the placenta is like creating. I was like, she's like the princess in the pea. Like, it's creating sort of almost like a barrier. And so she doesn't feel her as much.
So the placenta can be above, on the side, in the front. But if it's on the bottom where it's like covering the cervix, that's when it's bad.
Oh.
That's when it's like, if it's already like she's 8 months pregnant and the placenta is near the cervix, unfortunately, that's a C-section.
What? Why is that bad?
Because it's covering the cervix. So baby can't come out.
Oh,
placenta should not come out before the baby. Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. So I've actually had a client with placenta previa, which that's what it's called when the placenta is covering the cervix. And I suggested acupuncture and it helped.
Oh,
I was going to ask if there's any way to
it helps, and in some cases it don't. So it's really case by case.
Okay.
That's unfortunately the situation, because there are degrees. So like between 1 and 2 is still manageable, whereas sometimes it can still come up and it's fine. But if it's the degree of 3 and 4, which I mean, again, I'm not a medical person, so I really can't explain in detail what that means.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's the degree of 3 and 4, then that means that it's not coming up and it needs to be. It needs to be surgery.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Cool. Can you give us all your tags and your website?
Yeah, sure. So I don't have any like fancy bougie names. I'm just BonnieSilva.com.
Okay.
Awesome.
And then like on Instagram, I have Bonnie Silva.
Mm-hmm.
And then like Real Doula Club, which is like my little podcast for doulas. But like, other than that, like, it's just very simple.
Yeah.
I wish I had like baby's breath, first love or something. You know, like one of those funny tags, but I'm just like,
it's easy. People can just at you.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, totally.
Wait, tell us a little bit more about your podcast real quick.
So very quick. When I became a doula, I didn't find that there were a lot of podcasts like even like your podcast didn't exist like 3 years ago, which I think it was a very sad time. Yeah, it was a very sad time because ages. I feel like it would have been super helpful for people that are learning about their vaginas.
Blushing.
But like, you know, I decided to create a podcast for doulas more to be able to be like, hey, like, you know, I'm like handing people a branch sticks. Sometimes you're like in the bumfuck what Midwest. You don't have any network and you're like doing this alone. You feel like you don't have a community. And it's just like, no. There's a community. I'm here. Reach out. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's really important. And I think that that's like part of like sisterhood, like this whole like community of supporting your village, supporting your friends, supporting people with vulvas.
Yeah. And like seeing how we want the world to be and how we want to be supported and trying to do that for other people. And just
absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, that's definitely something that I think I'm personally really proud of with the podcast and everything, is that over the last year and change, we've created a really kind of awesome community of people that want to work together and support each other. And we've made all these new friends who have been out there this whole time that we never met. And so yourself included.
Yeah, thank you. And I think that that tells us of huge stories that people are longing to hear and talk about these things. Like, you know, the questions and topics that we talk about, that we talked about today, that you both are talking about constantly, people are longing for these things. So that's why, like, you know, we have to encourage each other, we have to support each other, but we also have to have fun along the way too.
And I think they're also looking for a different way to do things, because what we're doing isn't working.
Exactly. So we need to flip the script.
Like flip a baby. Too soon.
Don't flip back. Don't
stay
flip
where
back.
You are.
Stay where you're at. Stay where you're at.
My name is Marcel, and I'm partially a shell, as you can see on my body, but I also have shoes and a face, so.
I learned something really cool about hermit crabs this week.
Okay.
I'm so excited. This has been literally making me, my week about hermit crabs. Whenever I get sad now, I'm thinking about hermit crabs. And like, I have really bad cramps, so like every time they get bad, I'm like, hermit crabs. So when a crab finds a new shell, it leaves its old shell and tests the new shell for size. Mm-hmm. And if the shell is too big, it goes back to its old shell, and then it like, and then it chills by the old shell for up to 8 hours, and it waits for other crabs to come.
Oh.
And sometimes up to 20 crabs will come, and they'll all inspect the shell for size. And if they don't fit, they all hold on to each other. I don't know why. Maybe because of the tide. Wait. Maybe they're close to the water.
They hold on to each other while they're all the
crabs,
trying out.
Yeah, all the crabs form like a crab line.
Oh my God,
and they
it's
get
like an open house.
Yeah, and they get in order by size from biggest to smallest. And when a crab finally fits in that shell and abandons its shell, they all switch shells down the line. They all move up a size.
Teamwork.
I know.
Aww.
I love it so much. Every time someone's like, oh, I learned this really bad thing, I'm like, that's terrible. But
listen,
how about
this
fact about hermit crabs?
I love that.
Yeah, it's so heartwarming.
I'm going to live in that shell.
Yeah.
In that happy shell.
Like Marcel the shell.
Aww.
Marcel the shell. With shoes on. Thanks for listening to Welcome to My Vagina.
It's time for us to slide on out of here. You can find us on Instagram at Welcome to My Vagina.
On Twitter at Welcome to My Vag. Soon to be on Medium.
You can donate to us at Patreon, LiberaPay, PayPal, and Venmo at Welcome to My Vagina.
Yeah, become a monthly subscriber.
Yeah. Yeah, go to welcometomyvagina.com and become a subscriber to our newsletter as well.
You can email us at welcometomyvagina@gmail.com.
We like questions and fan art and jingles.
And suggestions for future episodes.
True.
Check out Jesse's awesome videos on YouTube. Just search for Welcome to My Vagina.
Check out Rebecca's awesome writing at franklyrebecca.com.
And head on over to morebanana.com to check out all of the awesome projects by our production company.
Yeah.
And thanks, Kate.
Thanks, Kate, for being our amazing, dope-ass fucking producer.
Cool.